This is Colorado Matters from Colorado Public Radio. I'm Ryan Warner. South Sudan is the world's newest country, now about a year and a half old, and it hasn't had an easy start. Setting aside that it's one of the least developed nations on Earth and that its relationships with surrounding countries are tense, refugees are pouring in from a conflict in Sudan, its northern neighbor. Denver aid worker Andre Heller of Doctors Without Borders recently got back from a refugee camp in South Sudan called Yida.
In the beginning, when the refugees started spilling across the border from the conflict in the Nuba Mountains in neighboring Republic of Sudan, it was a small camp. There was probably 10 to 20,000 people who were living there in relatively nice conditions. It was more of a village at the time, albeit a village precariously situated on the border of a conflict zone.
You say 10 to 20,000. That doesn't strike me as small, but that's small in comparison.
Small in comparison to what it became. The number of people continued spilling across the borders. By the month of May, it was 1,000 people a day who were coming into the camp.
How many people total?
In total, about 60,000 people are based there now. So you'd see tons of people in line waiting for water. People would wait for 2-3 hours on end.
What type of housing do people live in when a place that didn't exist on the map all of a sudden has 60,000 people?
Essentially some sticks making a tent-like structure with a plastic sheet over the top of it or grass.
And this is how family after family after family is living?
Family after family after family living in rooms no larger than this studio, about 8 feet by 8 feet, with up to 10 people living in a household.
What about sanitation?
Sanitation, meaning how many latrines and how much water is available for people, was grossly inadequate, not even close to international norms and standards. Much of the defecation was in the open or just on the outskirts of the camp. This is problematic in the sense that when it rains and when there's floods that rush through the area, that what that means is that it carries all the waterborne disease with it.
And of course, Doctors Without Borders has a particular focus on health. So talk to me about those diseases and the effect on the population.
Many of the most vulnerable members of the population, children under the age of 5, will come down with an episode of diarrhea or repeated episodes of diarrhea. Essentially, what we would see in our hospital is children arriving with multiple sicknesses at the same time, in septic shock, with pulmonary infections, diarrhea. And effectively, there was little that we could do to save many of their lives. Many of them we did save, but a lot of children died that didn't need to. We were seeing anywhere between 2 and 6 children dying in our hospital a day at the peak of the crisis.
You're listening to Colorado Matters. I'm Ryan Warner, and my guest is Andre Heller. He is with Doctors Without Borders and has been in many difficult spots on the globe, most recently South Sudan. Is there someone that you befriended there, or whose story you felt particularly attached to?
I remember one of our workers who had effectively grown up in refugee camps in northern Uganda from when he was young and fleeing the last round of conflict that ended in 2005. He had just returned home and he was doing his studies of medicine. And when he was on his way home, the war started again and he found himself in this refugee camp. Since he hadn't completed his studies in nursing, he was working with us as a translator. And he and I took many tours around the camp together, looking at the different conditions, looking at different areas that required more focus, speaking with people about their stories, about their history, about how they wound up there and the plight that they had fled from.
And this young man had basically spent much of his formative years in refugee camps.
That's right. I mean, and that he's not the only one in the area. That's really the story of a lot of people from the Sudan. I'm sure that everyone recalls the stories of the Lost Boys and people who spent much of their time in flight or in refugee camps, eventually settling somewhere. At the same time, too, life goes on in refugee camps, despite how difficult things may seem. You might be surprised to see how many children are smiling and playing and having fun and receiving educations as well. And
receiving educations?
Yeah,
how
absolutely.
Is that happening?
With schools that are set up. When you have a whole population take flight, well, teachers are part of the population and they go too. And everyone chips in to make their best effort to see that life goes on.
When you left, did you feel you made a difference?
Absolutely. I'm absolutely certain that the efforts that we put forth once this wave crashed over our heads really did turn the situation around.
What initially inspired you to get involved in work like this? You've let me just say, done work in, gosh, Chad, Pakistan, Yemen, Haiti, the Democratic Republic of Congo.
Among others.
Among others. These are not places on most people's bucket lists.
No, not exactly. I'd started my work in the arts and had always tried to engage my work with social issues. Following the floods from the Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans, I decided that it was time for me to leave this and go and do something. I didn't really know what that meant at the time.
So that was the pivotal event for you.
I would say the pivotal event for me would probably be like many other people in my generation, September 11th, where you really open up your eyes to what's happening in the world and maybe how little we understand of what's really going on out there. When New Orleans was flooded, that was the moment for me that I decided to be a participant in aid work as opposed to someone who follows politics. Mm. So I gave it all up of my life that I had here in Denver and packed up my car and went down to New Orleans to work for a little while. In doing that, I had been a donor to Doctors Without Borders before when I was working here in Denver. And at that point in time, I decided to apply for a position with them, and to my great surprise, I received one very quickly, and next thing I knew, I was in Africa.
How did the work in South Sudan compare to some of those other hot spots?
It's very different. South Sudan is a country that has tremendous lack of development in it. 50 years of armed conflict since its independence has meant that they didn't have time to do things like build roads, build schools, build hospitals, train healthcare workers, and so on. And it is one of the least developed areas in the entire planet. By comparison to a place such as Yemen, where I worked, it has nothing at all resembling that, or Pakistan or Haiti, where I recently returned from.
Which just compounds the challenges, I gather.
It can, yeah. It can certainly compound the challenges, and logistics are the biggest challenge in South Sudan. They were for the colonialists when they came in to try to occupy it hundreds of years ago, and it's the same problems that the country, as well as aid workers, face today.
What's next?
For me, that's a very good question right now. I'm not really sure. I think I need to calm it down a little bit after 6-7 years of this.
Thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Denver aid worker Andre Heller recently returned from a refugee camp in South Sudan. He handled logistics there for Doctors Without Borders. We've posted a series of photos taken inside the camp to our website, cpr.org.